Hello and welcome to episode 10-3 of the Tech Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen, and with me tonight is everyone's favorite export from the Big Easy, Sean Super Cheesy, Sean Mola Kirkland.
I hate the PlayStation Vita.
Hailing from the Navajo State is our own Sage. Samurage Morris Green recently had a birthday. Sage?
I did recently.
I have a question for you.
What's your question?
Has senility set in yet?
Considering that you're, like, several decades older than I am, I feel like that's not an appropriate question.
You know, anger is a common precursor.
Shut the fuck up.
And from the land of Elvis, the Titans, the Predators, and the South's largest and only legal Sailor Moon fan club is our own Eric Blue Swim.
I'm a banjo. Uh-huh.
So, before we kick things off with a little Vita talk, I wanted to make one announcement. Lately, you've probably noticed the frequency of the show has been slightly erratic. Yeah. And after careful consideration, we're going to move to a bi-weekly format this month. So, basically, that means no real changes. Then that's been as of late. No, seriously, our work schedules have been becoming increasingly intense, and we don't want to sacrifice quality, so we decided that twice-a-month format would work out the best for us.
Yeah, so basically what happened is Deagle is the only practicing teacher in the state of California that does not touch his students inappropriately, so they gave him shit tons of work to do.
Yep, that's basically it.
So, pretty much it, because Deagle's the best.
Yes, because I... can't touch people. So just so we could socialize with fellow human beings and be a little less weird on the air. Sounds good. So we're going to try to maintain the same low level of quality that we always do.
Ew, gross.
So Sean.
Yes.
You got a Vita. I got a Vita. Let's talk some Vita.
I love my Vita. I know I said in the intro that I hate it, but it's actually my favorite thing in the world.
Nice.
Man, I'm taking sloppy seconds.
More favorite than your dog?
He's not really a thing. He's a dog.
Better than paper dolls?
Much better than paper dolls.
Well, okay. Let's start. Let's talk a little bit about the hardware. Let's talk a little bit about the UI. Let's move on to software. Let me start. I've spent the last 2 weeks with the hardware, and I'm pretty impressed with the design. I don't think anyone would argue that the OLED screen is anything short of dazzling. It looks really cool. I mean, games look great. Movies, anime looks phenomenal on that.
I was really surprised how much better PSP games look on it. Like, I wasn't expecting. Yeah. I was expecting it to be a marginal difference, but I mean,
that's exciting.
It's yeah. Great.
I did think the bilinear filtering would look a little bit better. We'll get to that in a second. The one thing that knocks it down just a minor shot for me is it's still kind of hard to see outside because of the glare on the screen. That's the only thing that keeps it from being absolutely perfect.
I didn't have any problem with that until yesterday when I sat on the wrong side of the train, and right. I literally could not see anything.
When I get on the train, I will look sun side or, you know, shade side, and I will sit on the shade side if I'm going to play. So keep that in mind.
That's the problem that I have with the PSP. Zoom HD. That has an OLED screen as well, and when I get outside, I can't see that the screen on that thing worth squat.
Well, I think this teaches us two things. One, when you get on public transportation, you'll know the gamers from the not gamers because the gamers will look at what side the sun is on. And two, that maybe, possibly, when you're outside, like outside, not on public transportation, you should enjoy the outside and not play video games nonstop all the time.
Well, I've noticed that if I try and play video games outside, I get more bums talking to me, so I just stop doing it anyway.
It happens to me, too. What is that?
Well, no, they see, hey, you've got an expensive electronic gadget thing. You probably have money in your pocket.
Which is weird, because everyone these days who is not a bum, not to be anti-bum, but anyone who's not a bum has some sort of electronic gadget, basically, whether it's your phone or it's a gaming device. I mean, everyone has got something.
Well, in L.A., the bums have them, too, but...
Yeah. So
but the thing is, you're totally immersed. Like, your eyes are locked on the screen. You're not even looking at Mr. Bum, right? You have headphones in.
Mr. Bum.
And you're making no kind of contact, but they still bother you here.
My favorite is when they stick their head in between you and the screen. Like, I'm totally going to give you money now.
You guys should just start drop kicking people, and then they'll know. They'll be like, "Oh no, don't talk to that guy because he's the one that drop kicks bums."
Wait, we can't kill spiders, but we can beat bums.
I'm not telling you to beat them. I'm telling you to kick them in the shins. That's all.
Okay. So anyway, back to Vita. The actual design is pretty spotless. The analog sticks for me are pretty much second nature. The buttons that I complain were too small at E3. I gotten used to them. They're fine. The only thing I'm not sold on yet is rear touch. It hasn't become instinctive for me. Touching that rear. About half the time I get freaked out because I'll play something like Hustle Kings or Hot Shots Golf. And then I accidentally do something and there's an indicator that just flashes and I'm thinking, what the hell is that? In Super Stardust Delta, my big mitts were setting off the wormholes with Wild Abandon, so I had to remap them to the D-pad. I really hope that the software kind of takes this approach and allows you to remap it because I feel like I'm holding it wrong.
Yeah, that's basically how mine is. I started cramping my hands trying to hold it where I'm not touching the rear touch panel.
Where you really put it on those two little black pad areas. Yeah. I can't do that. What's so funny, Sage?
because Sean's comment was just I'm getting cramps in my hands trying not to rear touch.
But anyway, I was going to say the only game I played with like a compelling use of it was Asphalt Injection, where you could, if you put it in manual, you could use the rear touch's paddle shifters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was cool. But
it'd be interesting if they tried to simulate a stick on there, like a stick shift in there.
That would be interesting, although I feel like that would be
dumb.
Dumb, but I could see that sort of. No, that would be dumb. I'm sorry. I was trying to do it in my head. And I was like, no,
it was not my head.
That sounds like a gimmick from
like that. Trying to shoehorn in a stick shift. But anyway, let me talk about the UI. I'm not really a fan of. I think good user interfaces, and I think Sean will probably disagree with me. I think that they use a metaphor. I mean, you have stuff like Windows, that's a metaphor, a desktop, a mouse, cut and paste. People have something, you know, they need something to contextualize and associate it in a way that they can communicate with the operating system. 2 weeks in, I'm still baffled by Sony's UI.
Really?
So let me give you a couple problems. First of all, there's no consistency or redundancy. Just setting the thing up, sometimes you hit X to cancel, sometimes you rip out pages, you know, you swipe, sometimes you hit the circle button. I'd be fine if I could always choose from all three, but no, the designers like to mix and match, and you have to choose one. So
I got the understanding that in future updates, you're going to do a lot more of the sticker peeling. So, like, for example, when you're building your different pages for you're going to start, instead of pressing the X button, you're going to start ripping the pages off.
Okay, if they, you know, and it is kind of the first go around for Sony, so I'll give them that. But I just think it's one of the things I worried about is if I delete, say, I don't know, the video function, how do I get that back? You know, if I go in and delete. But going back to my metaphor problem, how would you describe the function of the UI in a few words?
The function?
Yeah, the functionality. I mean, there's buttons, there's pages, there's touches, extended touches. Can you think of a few words to describe the UI?
So I was going to say I would describe the UI design process as a design of abject fear. let me get into why, though. So I kind of tap danced around talking about this a couple episodes ago, but basically, so my company, we build large-scale multi-touch screens, specifically to view maps and globe data and stuff. And we've been doing that since 2003, I think. So we were one of the first multi-touch anything. So we own a lot of gestures and stuff like that and patents to that. So we got subpoenaed in that whole HTC Apple thing.
Right.
To basically determine what actually has prior art so that could be argued in court. And the type of nuanced questions that they would ask about our stuff is things as far as like when you push something to the side, how does inertia work? You know, is there inertia? Because apparently that's a patent. When you swipe left and right to go to a next object, apparently that's a patent.
Sure.
There's difference between how many hands you use to touch things. You know, like every little thing has a patent. So like the
breathing patented.
Well, no, like, but for example, the circles on the Vita, which everybody says looks stupid and childish, that is specifically to avoid a patent of the grid based icons on a handheld touch system.
Yep.
Do they have to be a circle? Because I really think they look ugly.
They do look ugly, but if they were a square, they'd be violating a patent.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
There's that artifacting around it, and it really makes the screen look like a lower resolution than it really is.
But don't blame it just on the patents. I mean, it's ugly because they had someone who was not creative enough to figure out a way to not violate the patent and still make it look good. I mean, it's both.
It's really hard, Sage. I
know.
All of the restrictions, it is really hard. Like, the fact that they're floating, that's also a patent restriction because when they get that stretch effect, it's to keep it from, if it looks like the entire page of things is stretching, that's a patent.
They haven't been sued on the cross-media bar. Why can't I have a cross-media bar?
Because the cross-media bar isn't touch-enabled. It's when you add the touch.
But it could be when you use the move, it kind of moves around, and I could see a simulation of that where...
Still, you're not touching it with your finger to move it. That is where the patent comes in. So if you, like, let's imagine the cross-media bar, and you were to swipe left, and it were to keep going, you'd violate a patent. If it were to just go over one, you'd violate a patent. So basically, they'd have to set up some sort of system where if you swipe, you move over, like, two or three.
Okay. So
I mean, basically, the patents for handheld touch-enabled devices are absurd. And it's something that our courts need to deal with before it becomes a safe environment to develop in. And, you know, bravo to Sony to think of something that works. And apparently that, like I said before, that sticker pulling thing, that's going to be their bread and butter. And that apparently does not violate the page turning patent. So they're probably going to try and get that into everything. So imagine those little circles will go away and turn into small stickers. I imagine the X's will go away and those will turn into stickers.
X's?
Yeah.
The X to get rid of?
Yeah.
Okay, and riddle me this, Batman. What's up with the hidden menus? Like, for instance, with the PSPs, when you have to hold on the screen to bring up that menu. I've talked to about 5 different Vita owners that didn't even know it was there.
They never really explain it, but the only reason I knew it was there is because somebody talked about it in some press conference a long time ago.
Right, but it's almost like a hidden menu.
I mean, how are you gonna integrate that into PSP, though?
I don't know, some kind of, you know, setup there. Perhaps, I don't know, the back button, holding down the back button. I don't know, something.
I don't see how holding down the back button is necessarily better than the touch button.
No,
I do think it needs to be more responsive, because you kind of have to hold it for 2 seconds and then let go, and then it'll pop up. Mm-hmm. I think that's weird, but I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, something where it's a little bit... I don't know about it.
Being able to map the buttons to the analog stick in Metal Gear, whichever the one I'm playing is, Peace Walker, that makes all the difference in the world. That was a B game before, and that is an A game now. A minus.
Okay. So enough trash talk. I want to talk about some of the things I really like about it. First of all, limited multitasking. You can instantly open an instruction booklet while your game is paused. That is really cool, especially because there's no, you know, instruction booklets with the cartridge-based games.
That is really cool.
Background downloads for most games, I think, is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
On-screen notification when you adjust the volume. That, to me, hooked the shit out of me on the PSP.
That is something. It seems so silly, but yeah, when the PSP, when you're adjusting the menu and you feel like you have to go back to the cross-media bar, so you can make sure it's not super powdered.
Yeah, so you blow your eardrums. Now, understandably, I know Sony, they want to have the platform secure. So when you hook it up to a PC, it's recognized, but like a lot of Apple products, you can't really drag and drop media. Instead, you use a content manager assistant, I believe is the name.
I
hate it too, but it's actually pretty good once you use the right codecs for video. I didn't have much of a problem, and I think that the interface for music, you can group by albums. I mean,
why did they just abandon MediaGo? Like, MediaGo had finally gotten to a place where it wasn't garbage, and now they've just completely abandoned it.
I can't answer that because I never used MediaGo.
See, it works, now it works just like iTunes. It's just iTunes that recognizes a PSP. And
I can't stand iTunes, though.
Well, I'm sorry. But I mean, it's weird because, like, I re-downloaded MediaGo and I uploaded, you know, I put all my saves into it and I put all my games into it and I re-downloaded everything, you know, in preparation for the Vita, and I'm sitting here going, huh, I bet there's going to be a title update tomorrow that's going to add Vita support. That's got to be what happens. And then it never came, and I got my Vita and I plugged it into my PC and I was like, what's this content manager?
Yep.
Oh, it's just a collection of folders. Like, it's, I don't know. It's such a, it feels like a step backwards to me.
Yeah. They probably didn't want people, you know, fiddling with the, even though they probably could in a heartbeat, with the internals and stuff like that with the PSP. Because that was always probably a little bit confusing where you had different folders. You had a video folder and you needed a thumbnail along with the file itself, for, you know, for most people.
Mm-hmm.
Casual. But anyway, let's get on to software. Let me start off with Mod Nation Racers Road Trip, which when the first reviews came out for that, they were pretty average. I saw some C's, 7s. And
I saw
so,
a couple of 3 out of 10s.
Really? Now,
yeah.
I didn't expect much from the title, and except for two problems. One is a spotty frame rate when there's a group of cars launching weapons at the same time. Also when you get hit by a weapon sometimes. And the load times are pretty long. Other than that, and some people will complain about the lack of an online multiplayer component, but other than that, it's really good. And I'm kind of surprised they sold it for $29.99 because I'm really impressed by its ambition. It takes the PS3 version, improves on it with the driving model, and I'm hoping they can patch it up and really deliver on it. As a kart racer...
Well, They've already committed to not patching in multiplayer, if that's what you're waiting for.
No. I was talking about the times. I know that there was a patch recently for Wipeout that cut the load times down. And when the Mod Nation for PS3 came out, they also it's still long as hell, but they cut it by a good 10, 15 seconds. But as a kart racer, I think the driving model is really good. You hold down the X to drift and things like drafting earn you boost. And there's about 5 or 6 different power-ups, which you can use immediately, or you can collect more for an even bigger weapon. And what's nice is you can cash in your weapons for additional boost. The tracks themselves, there's plenty of shortcuts, and there's incentives on every track. So there's little building blocks that you can use in the mode. You get additional units when you make a near connection. And I forgot to talk about near. I think that's a really good...
I love near.
Yeah.
I wish it was a little bit more...
intuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hate that it'll let you befriend people within, I think it's 2 kilometers, but there's somebody...
You didn't change it to... Miles yet, Sean?
No, I haven't. But there's somebody just outside of my 2 kilometer range that plays Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom, and it's like constantly playing it. And I got a bunch of free gifts from them. Well, 2 free gifts from them. But they're just outside of that range, so I can't friend them. And I'm like, I just want somebody near my house that I can play Marvel vs. Capcom with.
No, the people that just show up, their icon is just the gray generic smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they?
Those, I think, are remnants of where you have seen people.
Oh, okay.
The ones that you can't click on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's... So basically, let's say you're at your house and you see, you know, 12 people playing at once, and then you go the next day and you see 3. I think 12 little icons will show up, but only 3 of them will be active.
Okay. Every once in a while, near lies, and it tells me 44 people are in range, which I know is not true at all.
Well, are you doing it on campus?
No, it's showing me about, at home, I'm getting about 8 people within 1 point.
8 people that live in Somar.
Yeah, there's all 12 of us. No, but it showed 44 the other day. It's like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I don't know how it's getting it. What's funny for me is I keep discovering Japanese games because I live in UCLA territory.
Yeah.
So everybody that's here that has a Vita has had one since the Japanese release, and they only play Japanese games. So,
now, can you grab items? Like I noticed somebody had the Japanese version of Katamari.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still do the gifts transfer between versions?
I don't know. The only gifts I've actually downloaded, I downloaded one for Mod Nation Racer just because I saw it, and I was like, oh, that's cool, I got a gift, but I'm never going to play that game because I already have the PSP version, which is superior, and I still don't like it.
Wait, but the PSP version is superior?
It's got great frame rate, and you can play online.
No, the driving model's not. And the tracks themselves, you can't even loop over another track. It's totally gimped. Anyway. So back...
What I was going to say is that I did get the Gold Zero in Marvel vs. Capcom 3, and I did download that.
I got a Gold Hulk. I was pretty happy about that. Anyway, so what sold me back to Mod Nation Racers is the customization. Sean, you know I'm a big sucker for the construction set type games. Mm-hmm. And I think that this portable construction set is probably one of the most powerful ones I've seen in a handheld game. You know, you can customize cars or racers. It's a bit needless with no online racing, but I was just tooling around with creating tracks.
Wait, can you at least share online?
Yeah, you can share your tracks.
Okay, that's worth it. Anything.
And there's just small little details, you know, in the game that really try to hook you in and keep you playing. So I would think, you know, anyone who gave it a 3, I don't know, that seems totally unwarranted.
I don't know. I still think the party, if you will, of a social racer that you can't play online is kind of...
There are some ghosts. I haven't got to them yet, but there's some ghosts in there that you can play and download. So next up is this week's Jeer, speaking of bad games, Dungeon Hunter Alliance, which was a 99-cent iPhone app and a $12, I believe, PS3 title, probably.
No, $30 PSP title. Oh, PSP title.
PS3. No, it was online.
Oh.
I think with the PS Plus, I think it was like $8 at one time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying the Vita.
No,
it's like $30.
Yeah, it's a $30 or $40 Vita app, which is about $25 too high. Now, anyway, I like a good loot game, and Dungeon Hunter, it starts off promising enough. You can pick out, you know, you have one of three heroes. You have a fighter, mage, or the rogue. There's a variety of weapons you can use based on your stats, and you clear the first dungeon. Probably takes you a good 20 minutes, and at the end, there's a final boss. He's called the Cremator, and he's big, and he's dumb, and he breathes fire, and, you know, you go in for the kill.
For me, he wasn't the Cremator. He was the Troll King.
Oh. I like that laugh, Sage. So far, so good. So you go to town, and you get additional quests, and here's where things go bad. The second dungeon, it uses the same graphics and general layout, so much so that it made me think I was in the first dungeon again. So that's not good. So I'm supposed to be killing trolls, not the Troll King, but trolls, which are easier to spot because there's only maybe four or five different enemy types in the whole level. So back to the trolls. They're bigger than the other ones, but they're slow. And they usually take 20, 30 hits to kill. Now, the problem is you'll whittle away their life bar down to nothing, and then all of a sudden they pull a Kaiser Soze-style giveaway there. So their lumbering walk will turn into this fast little scuttle. It looks like a roach when the kitchen lights, you know, hit. So you catch up with them you know, later, and their entire life is restored. It is the most annoying thing.
See,
that, you know, get me the fuck out of this dungeon.
Like in Diablo, they have a shaman kind of way, or they just regenerate?
No, they walk off screen, and they totally regenerate. So they can go from a single hit point to being fully, and there's no you know, character that's healing them or anything.
Are they within, like, throwing range? Are there throwable weapons? Could you throw anything at them?
If you're the mage, you've got magic. Here's the difference between Deagle's version of that review and my version of that review. He said, you know, you get to the end of the first dungeon, you get to town, and that's when things get bad. Mine was, you turn the game on, and you get past the start screen, and that's where things go bad.
That's the difference between an optimist and a pessimist.
It's ugly, it controls poorly, the dialogue is bad, and you have to sit through all of it. You have to read all of it in terrible font. They made picking things up a chore. To pick things up.
No, that's the right trigger.
They never tell you that. So when the first time you find anything, you go up to it and you're like, which button do I hit?
Yeah, okay.
So it sounds like it's just bad, because I was going to say...
Other thing. Hold on, I'm not done.
Okay.
Let me talk about the side quests. They're so poorly articulated that I was finishing them on accident. And the other thing are the graphics and the music. They stutter when there's more than three enemies on screen. So I'm not going to waste my breath. Instead, I'm going to tell the listeners this. Do not buy Dungeon Hunter Alliance for the Vita. If you're curious, get the iPhone version, mail half of what you save to a charity of your choice, or go get a lap dance. That's the Paragon and Renegade option for this week.
Yeah, let me parlay that into Asphalt Injection, which I have basically the same thing.
I love that title, too.
Asphalt Injection.
Asshat and Jerk Sean. But no, I mean, that game, unlike Dungeon Hunter, it is at least playable. It is kind of fun. It is a pretty decent arcade racer. There's some dumb things like the least possible fun crashing. Like, right. You crash and it's like...
And it seems accidental.
Yeah.
At the time. The hit model is way off on that.
Yeah. It is as generic a racer as you can get. It looks okay. It drives okay. The announcer is obnoxious. I hate her. I want to strangle her. But the thing is, it's basically Asphalt 6 with, I think, like, maybe 4 new cars and,
yep,
like, 1 new track and 1 new mode. Yep. And Asphalt 6 is $1.
And this is paid 10 cents for it.
And this is a $30 game.
Yeah.
It's like, why? I realize Ubisoft is publishing for Gameloft, but how do you make that decision that you're going to take this 99-cent game and charge $30 for it? You could buy,
I don't know.
You could literally buy 30 copies of that game.
And you know what's sad is that Ubisoft does have some good games that aren't Gameloft games. You know, the Rayman is really solid. Lumines is pretty solid. And I really just think it gives them a bad rap.
Oh, it was, I don't know. They should kind of step away from the Gameloft thing because that really, like
so.
You said, it's really making them look bad.
Yep, I think, I totally agree.
And what's really upsetting is eventually Asphalt Injection and Dungeon Hunter Alliance are going to be in the bargain bin for $5, and they will still be 500% as expensive as, well, by then it'll be free on iPhone, but...
Maybe they can give them away free on PS Plus or something.
I know, right? That's what they should do.
Yeah. It seemed like I was playing a PSP Mini.
Yeah.
To me. So.
I just had to get that out.
Well, and it sounds like it's not, because what I was going to say originally is that, you know, from places like the R.A. Salvatore universe, there is a canon that, like, trolls are particularly difficult to kill unless you cover them in fire and they burn to death. Like,
No, this is the thing. It is, kill it with fire. Now, this is the thing. They move a certain way. They move slow, right? Now, when they're attacking you, if they have the ability to move fast, why don't they move fast then? Instead, I really thought it was a glitch in the game. They just all of a sudden they scamper. It's just poor programming.
I'm saying it sounds like, because I was going to defend it and say, well, maybe they were trying to be realistic with the trolls and that's why they regenerate so quickly, but it sounds like it's just poor game design.
You're thinking way too hard about this. I'm
trying to throw them a bone, man.
This is Gameloft, makers of, what is it, Modern Combat?
Shut up, whatever. I was trying for them. I was trying.
Okay. Devil's Advocate has now left the building. So the last thing I'm going to talk about is Hot Shots Golf World Invitational for Vita, which is pretty much, and I talked to Sean about this during the week, it's an up-res version of Hot Shots Golf
Open Tee
for the PSP. There's new courses that look good, and there's new control options, but it's basically the same golf role-playing game where you play to unlock new equipment. You unlock new characters, clubs, balls, accessories. I mean, you start off with the same spiky-haired guy or the girl. I'm always the guy. And you play in tournaments, and if you blow it on the last hole, you lose everything. So there is some intensity. The difference is there are online matches, which are kind of fun. There's daily challenges, things like that. I haven't played too much online because I have a Wi-Fi model, Vita, and I'm always on the go. I did play a match in Burbank, the city. They have Wi-Fi across the downtown area, but I was waiting for a train and, I caught the train and I dropped, my game like a douchebag. Oh,
poor guy.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, so.
Sucks.
So, yes, I was a douchebag, but, Hot Shots Golf, I'm damning it with faint praise here. If you liked Open Tee, probably stay away from it because it's the exact same game. If you haven't played it, then it's cool.
Yeah, I think it's always good to have one copy of Hot Shots Golf, but you don't need to have more. Like, if you already own a digital copy of either of the Open Tee games. What?
If you own one, you own the library because they are similar. I don't know why I buy every single one.
I don't.
I like the game that much that I buy every single one.
I would buy one for every system, but it's one of those things that I do own a digital copy of OpenT, so I have no reason to buy this one.
I guess, you know, it's a portable and a home version. You can two versions.
I, on the other hand, have no desire to play golf ever in real life or as a video game.
You know what? I would have said that. See, that is, if you would have stayed at Tulane, you would have played so much fucking Hot Shots of Golf because that is all we did.
When is that all you did?
Whenever Jeff, Sam, and I were in the apartment at the same time.
Huh. I guess we were too busy playing Worms and Illbleed. I never noticed there was golf.
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
Golf on a driving range, it's really, it's actually a lot of fun when you just get out there and you're just smacking at the ball. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
I agree.
I gotta say that.
I think part of it is I'd rather hit a moving target. I like shooting. I would.
That's how you aim for the range card.
Yeah.
That's why I did with Tiger Woods 99.
No, I would rather smack at a shooting target, not I want to hit something else. Like baseball or tennis machines that, like, launch a ball at you, that I'm kind of okay with, or shooting, like, you're turning. Mm. But I don't like, oh, look, a stationary ball. I'm going to whack.
Golf's a finesse game.
Yeah, and strategy.
It's different.
The zen thing about golf is knowing your personal limitation.
You mentioned Worms. Have you tried Worms Golf? Maybe that could be your gateway drug.
No, I have not. I thought that might be my gateway, but I don't think I have a system.
You know, Worms is golf.
Worms is not golf.
No, he's got a point. The mechanics in Worms are not too dissimilar to the mechanics of Hot Shots.
What you're doing is aiming your trajectory, power. It's the exact same thing, and you're compensating for wind. Worms is golf. Worms golf is basically just Worms. Okay? So just take it another step and you're playing golf. There you are. See you at the range.
Yeah, it's cool that you're trying for that, but I don't think it's gonna fly.
All right.
Please do not aim your shots at the range card.
I tell you what, this year at E3, if we have some free time, we could play some Worms golf and you can try.
No. You know where we're going is to Koreatown, because there's a little place. It's a couple stories up and there's a driving range, an actual driving range.
On top of a building?
Yes. On top of a building. There was a movie that it was featured in. And no, it's in a building. You're like three stories. You look down. If you step over the edge, you're dead.
Nope. It's already a bad idea.
That's where we're going.
No, I'm all about this. I'm all about this, and I will let the listeners know if I have been converted to golf or not.
Okay, we'll do this, but I'm going to wear a blindfold the entire time because I can't handle heights.
Step forward, Sean. Oh, there he goes.
No, we need Nola.
So let's talk about not golf. How's that? We'll talk about Michael Jackson.
Yeah, woo!
Michael Jackson.
I reviewed that game, and it is not bad.
Good.
Did you beat it?
I did not. Well, I played through at least every game at least once. How's that? I played through certain songs several more times than once.
Did you play Thriller?
No, I did play Thriller. I think I unlocked everything in Thriller, actually. But Thriller is actually the worst song in that game.
That's not nice. Really, it's my favorite song.
Really? Yeah, well, they...
Are you going to do Michael through the whole
skit? Lou, I love your impression. I love it.
I do, too, but I don't want to hear through Sean's talking.
It makes me heartsick because I miss Michael, and listening to you is like maybe he's here with us again.
I'm chanting in the soul of Michael Jackson.
Lord.
Anyway, my Japanese prayer beads, and I'm focusing really hard to keep the connection.
I was just saying that so every level was basically an homage to a music video, but there are some that are more homage-y than others, and Thriller was one of the ones that it was just like, there's zombies in it, and you're dancing, and you're wearing a Thriller jacket, and that's it. So, which is unfortunate, because there's such a good underlying story in that video, and they just completely ignored it.
A trademark infringement thing, or was that just a they got lazy thing?
The core concept of the game is you're watching Michael Jackson dance, and if the music video didn't really lend itself to you watching Michael Jackson dance, kind of had to change. Like, Black and White is another one, because the Black and White music video is, you know, you close up on people and changing into stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what they basically did is they kind of cut between that and the long-form version of it, which is, like, 20 minutes long, and it's this whole... narrative about a guy who gets shot from his chair across the world. But it's basically just Michael Jackson dancing in a bunch of places. Yeah. Anyway, that game is. I wanted to bring that up because it's a good example of how they took an iPhone or an iPad game that is, I think, $4, and they made it $30, but they made it worth it because in the iPad version, there's a bunch of in-app purchases, and in this, they just give you all those. And so I think it's something like $32 if you buy everything in the iPad game, and it's $30 to just have everything unlocked.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if they're gonna port it over from the mobile platform, at least give all the goodies with it.
Yeah, and I thought that was decent.
Is there Remember the Time?
Yes, there is.
Oh, okay. I like that one.
They're 15
about BDG.
I did not want to like that game, but it was fun.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. I also
didn't want to love it, but I do.
Yeah, I also played Marvel's Capcom 3. Which I love a lot more than the PS3 version, mostly because it's exactly the same game, but Heroes and Heralds, when you play it on the go, is really, really cool, because you jump in, you play around, it takes you 2 minutes, and then you feel like you've accomplished something in the grand scheme of things.
Now, that's in the download already, right?
Yes, that was the day one title update that gives you Heroes and Heralds.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. And yeah, I like I said, that I like it more. The only major difference is the load times are a little longer, and that is to say there are load times in this one. The PS3 version, they were so short that they were able to hide all of them.
Yeah.
And when you load up a mode, like you load up Heroes and Heralds, you pick Heroes, and then it'll load.
Kind of the same, Blouse is the same. The load times are a little bit longer. You know what game has amazing load times?
What?
Dynasty Warriors next.
Yeah, you know
the,
what?
The load times are so game. Short. You don't even notice them. It says, now loading. Now, you're ready.
Done.
Yeah.
Damn.
I can't believe it. And then
you know what is the opposite of that? Fucking Puddle. For a simple-ass physics game has the fucking longest... I'm saying fuck so much because I'm really... No, yeah, well, I did read your review, but also I'm concurring with it because I was playing Puddle, and I was... you weren't as excited about it as I was, so I was willing to overlook a lot of, little... flaws, because I was like, yeah, Puddle's going to be great. And that literally made me not want to play the game anymore, even though I love the idea of the game, because I was like, man, I could play a whole level of anything else in the time it takes it to load one sequence.
Right.
Other
games load up. The entire game loads up. How long it takes a level to load in
Puddle. Right, totally. Yeah.
You know, I brought up Peace Walker earlier, but that's another good reason to bring that up, is that Peace Walker had terrible load times just going from one area to another when you were in a mission.
Uh-huh.
And those are so much more improved on the Vita.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does it reduce a lot of the load times?
By a lot.
I've noticed that. Okay. I thought it was just my imagination, but...
And one of the things, too, is that... So Peace Walker had this thing where if you could install extra... or extract extra information, and it made your file bigger, but it made things load faster, and you could... There are extra vocals during a mission. And this one, if you put your system to sleep in the middle of a mission, it'll turn all that off. So the load times get longer, and the voices go away for the duration of that mission. But with the Vita, there's something about it that when you put it to sleep, it doesn't shut everything off. You still get the voices, and the load times are a little bit longer, but they don't completely go... back to normal. So, and at the end of the mission, it still registers like, "Hey, you put your system to sleep. Do you want to reactivate the voices?" And you're like, "Yes," but the voices never go away. So it does something weird where maybe it doesn't do the big package, but that middle package that you can extract, it still pulls from that, which is really cool.
That's weird for a portable game because I'm always, putting my system to sleep.
Yeah, but yeah, that was the other thing. Reader asked if I would do Monster Hunter, so I put that in as soon as I got it. Twin Sticks, Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, not a good idea.
Uh-oh.
Does not help the game at all. It looks a lot better, and it is nice to play Monster Hunter on that big screen, but the way the up and down, or the Y-axis on the camera works in that game, since it's in six fixed positions, it's really easy to accidentally screw your camera over with that left or that right stick. So it's basically a waste of time to put that in twin stick.
Oh.
So. But maybe when Monster Hunter third HD comes out in the States, right?
Yay!
It could be.
Let's go, yes.
Yeah, but that's pretty much... I mean, I played a lot of stuff on the Vita, but I'm pretty sure we've been talking about this for, what, 45 minutes? I'm pretty sure people are bored to death of hearing about Vita games. Rayman looks really good, but it's
yeah, it does.
It's too long for me. I don't need to play a platformer for that long.
Okay. Sage.
What?
You got any short impressions? Sage, I hear you've been doing some photography these days.
The funny kind or the serious kind?
Describe them both. What's going on?
Well, the serious kind, which I don't think you're referencing, is that I have a photography show coming up in about a month and a half of my actual photography.
Awesome.
Which I'm very excited about. So if any of you are coming through New Mexico, you should go by the Op-Sit bookstore, which is an abbreviation for a Latin phrase that means work cited. It's off of Baca, right by Counterculture. So if any of you come through Santa Fe, go see my photography. The funny
off
photography.
By Baca.
No, it's off. So the main road through town is called Cerrillos. There's a street that intersects with it called Baca. And on Baca,
that's
like.
Spanish right, for cow.
Yes.
In Japanese for idiot.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Stupid cow.
Baka.
I actually worked with a girl who was a huge anime nerd, and we're good friends. And she, like, we worked in a kitchen, so everyone there was Hispanic. So when she would say baka and she meant idiot, they thought she was saying cow, so they started calling her cowgirl. Not to be mean, not like in a physical referential kind of way, but in like a, they thought she was saying cow all the time, but actually she was saying idiot. It was really funny. Anyway, no, the funny photography, which made me late today, was that I was taking pictures of three men in my law class building a giant vagina.
Alrighty then.
Wait, a giant vagina? How
yes.
giant is it?
It takes
is,
up
is
the
it
space.
Capable of swallowing a person whole?
Yes.
Oh, God!
Can a person climb in and be born again?
Oh, yes. In fact, everyone who has class in that classroom will have to do it because they built it over two of the big double doors going into the room.
Wow.
I think we have the episode title.
Giant vagina. I don't think we can title our episode Giant Vagina. But anyway, it's because they're doing the vagina monologues at my school. And so they recruited some people to build a giant vagina over one of the doorways as a way of promoting it. But the funny thing was that it was like three guys in my class. There's not a single female helping them do this. And then I thought about it. I was like, well, actually, unless it's a lesbian, probably they do spend more time looking at vaginas than any of the women do. So really it makes sense, maybe, to have a bunch of guys build a giant vagina.
It does.
They actually texted me a picture just a few minutes ago, and it looks not stupid.
All right. Awesome.
So there you go. But that's why I have sex on the brain tonight, because I watched them build a giant vagina.
A vagiant.
A gianja.
Blue's going to come over there and put his laser pointer and shoot it out.
Ew. No, don't do that.
Okay. So you've been playing any games? Transition
Yeah, vagina games. No. Yeah. Yes, I've been playing games. I do not have a Vita, so I've not been playing Vita.
Yes.
I have been playing a game that I got to preview. The article should be up later this week, and I can talk about it now, right? Yeah, because it's not embargoed anymore. So I've been playing Risen 2, which is a pirate RPG. And RPG, you're right. Sorry, thanks for the correction. And I'm actually really impressed, and I'm not often really impressed, but it's very good about, it's like all of the best parts from, I mean, arguably Skyrim set a new bar for RPGs, a new bar for RPGs, and so it's conceivable that other RPGs would be, you know, inclined to fall short, but this one is not, I mean, it doesn't have all the majesty of the graphical display that Skyrim does, but that's because it's from a much smaller studio. But it looks good, and it's everything that you like or that should have worked from other RPGs. So it's all of the, like, I mean, not in as much depth as BioWare, because that's not their focus, but mm-hmm. BioWare, you know, you have all of the, like, Mass Effect, Dragon, different abilities to converse with people, and how you converse with people actually does affect your quests and how you go through the game. I mean, they employ that really, really well. It's everything good from a Bethesda RPG as far as combat goes.
I wouldn't say that Bethesda has good combat figured out. Well, I guess they...
I guess what I mean, not so much like actual fighting combat, but the way it plays out, like the way that combat, you know, sort of mm-hmm. runs out on itself. I think that works really well. They do the same. They took the same like slow motion. If you get like a critical hit kill, they do the like slow motion. And because you're using swords, blood just goes everywhere. So that's
is that a technical term?
Yes. And then, you know, unlike Fable, it's like everything Fable wanted to do well and didn't, this game actually does. Like, they don't hold your hand about, you know, golden pathway bullshit showing you where things are. Like, you actually have to go figure out where things are, which I find really enjoyable. I think that's a much better way to have an RPG because it's a much more immersive experience than, you know, than having something that's like, oh, let me hold your hand the whole time. And all of the cool, this is basically everything I'm going to say in my preview, so not to be redundant, but I really liked that they took all of these cool plot points that have come up in pirate literature over the last, like, decade or so, like a lot of the monster stuff from Pirates of the Caribbean from the later ones and, like, you know, sea gods and goddesses. And they, like, took all this mythology and actually tried to weave it into a story without focusing. Like, Pirates of the Caribbean just focuses on the love triangle between, you know, all the pirates, which whatever. But not to knock the movies, but whatever. I don't really care about love triangles. But I really liked that they took all these different plots. So it's not just that it's an RPG and you're wearing pirate clothing. There are actual, you know, pirate storyline elements. Your skill trees involve, like, one of, not to give them all away, but one of the skill trees is a voodoo skill tree. And so you can, like, make little voodoo dolls and do potions and shit. So they really tried to make it a pirate, you know, feeling, as opposed to just being like, oh, it looks piratey, but it's the same right. as every other RPG.
Pirate skin it, yeah. That's cool.
You're right.
Now, yeah. Now, the first one, a lot of people didn't like, but I thought there was something to really enjoy about the first Risen.
Is that the one that Shipwreck really liked?
Maybe. Because I think Shipwreck is mentioned in the game. Not the person, but I think I think they say the word Shipwreck a lot.
Well, no, I just remember he liked it because there was the one quest where you found where somebody sent you to buy drugs or something, and the actual item was called Bag O' Drugs.
Yep, that's it. Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know. I mean, that was me trying to decide how to answer what you said. I feel like even people who didn't, I mean, it depends what they didn't like about Risen, but I feel like even people who, because Risen wasn't so much about pirates, and this, like, even people who weren't a big fan of Risen, if you want a good pirate RPG, this is a really good pirate RPG. So if you are it, like, I'm into pirates. My Facebook is in pirate language. I mean, I like pirates. So for me, it's great to be able to play a pirate game that's pretty immersive. Like, I haven't liked a pirate game this much since Curse of Monkey Island 3. So it's been a while since I encountered one that made me like, yeah.
Sid Meier didn't do it for you?
Sid Meier was okay, but I felt like
it wasn't really a pirate game. Yeah.
Stumbled about a lot. Like, it wasn't really. It was more about like diplomacy with a pirate skin. It wasn't really pirates. This is pirates. They swear a lot. If you don't drink enough, they make fun of you.
There's no dancing in it.
No dancing. They swear all the fucking time. I mean, if you like sailor mouths, you should play the game just for that. Like, there's
Sailor
a
Moon
lot.
We like Sailor Moon.
No.
You just took it to a weird place, Blue. Now it's. Really? Now they've gone from swearing a lot to being supple, pouty.
To blow up dolls. Next week, a review of Sailor Moon Mouth. The latest fleshlight accessory.
I hope for the
it comes with little fucking pigtails on the side.
Those are the handlebars.
And we
where have we gone? Let's edit that all out.
I tried. Stop it.
Sorry.
Well, anyway, I hope for the developer's sake that the game doesn't get too pirated.
See what you did there. Yeah, no, I hope so too. And honestly, I'm not a big, no pun intended on this one. I'm not a big anti-pirate when it comes to software. However, Piranha Bytes is like a really genuine company. I mean, all of the info that I know of them and all of the emails that we've gotten from them, they're just really genuine, nice people, and they work really hard. They're a team of like, what is it, 25?
Yeah.
If that, maybe less. And they've made like a really pretty solid game. I mean, there's not much to this game that is wrong that I can find. There's a couple things that are a little like meh, but mostly everything is really good, and some parts of it are really great. I mean, the music's wonderfully delightful. There's a couple weird things where like guys won't get out of your way if you're trying to walk past them, and
That's pirate behavior.
No, but it's not like if you go into a room you're not supposed to be in and then you try to leave, they'll stand in the doorway and like you can't move them by walking into them, but if you don't leave the room they will try to kill you, but you can't get out of the room because they won't get out of the doorway, so you have to like move further into the room so that they'll come out of the doorway and then go out the door past them, and if you take too long getting out of the room they kill you.
It sounds like a shop in Sheer and the Wanderer. The way the shops work is you go and you basically take things off the shelves. Uh-huh. And then the storekeeper will move in the front of the door, and he won't let you out until you pay for it. And if you don't have enough money, the only way to get out is either to sell all the things you stole from him and hope that it's enough that you can buy your way out, or kill yourself and start the whole game over again.
That's really funny.
That's the only way out for shoplifters.
Yep.
It's not that bad because they don't actually kill you because you're friends. I mean, you're not friends with them, but they're townspeople. So they'll kill you. They'll, like, beat you to the point of you're basically dead, and then you get up, and they're like, now get out again. And so you have to, like, go through this thing of trying to get out. But every time they down you, you lose glory, which is cool because the way you level up your skills, instead of experience, they call it glory. And so depending on what you do, you get more or less glory, which is nice because it takes since most games don't do the whole morality element very well anyway, it's great that they just sort of take that out and they're like, it's about glory. You're a pirate. Oh. You're not a hero anyway. Sean, you never get to give me a hard time for being dirty again, ever, ever, ever.
Blue, give me something clean, please. Wash away the filth.
You want something squeaky clean? It's actually been like the fact that I haven't really played much this past week, besides you know what I'm doing the column on Star Wars episode. Huh?
I played two more games, Punk.
Okay.
Uh oh.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just saying. H, what'd you play?
Jackass. I love your effort. Did we lose Sean? Did I offend him by telling him that he's filthy?
Hole.
Filthy hole.
Okay.
Back to...
Apparently not. Right, good. Got it. Okay. So I played Puddle. Fuck that game. And then I got to play...
That was one
play...
of the two?
No, I bet I did play Puddle and fuck that game. I got to play a little bit of Metro 2033. Okay. Is that the number? I think that's the year number. I always get the year
number. That seems like a very Sage-friendly game.
I like it. I didn't think I was going to like it. A friend had it, and I jumped on it. I really like it. It's very enjoyable. There's nothing. The controls are a tiny bit like sticky every now and then, but mostly the flow is nice. The storyline is good. The way they handle ghosts is chilling and really cool.
What did you play it on?
The sequel's coming out soon. I played it on PC.
Okay, maybe it's better on PC.
I've heard that the Xbox port is pretty poor.
Yep.
You know what, games like that, I don't know why you would ever play them on not a PC. I mean,
they sent it to me on 360?
Well, yeah, but okay, fine. That's the only good excuse. Anyone else who's like, I'm never going to play it on anything but that. I mean, some games are better on PC. You just have to be able to accept that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I definitely, if you haven't ever checked out that game, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's, Russian fallout after the bombs kind of scenario. Everybody lives underground. You got your typical monsters. Although the monsters in the gross thingies that are mutated and crawling around are, I think, to me, more graphically cool than any other, like, after fallout mutants that I've seen in other games. Just because the monsters are so neat looking and they're not really stereotypical.
I like the idea that you're walking around and these things are attacking you. Like, neat.
Yeah. Aren't you pretty? Let me take a picture. Hey, you'll be my model for a giant vagina.
And then blow a hole through you with my giant gun. Mm. See what I did there?
No, I don't really see what you did there.
The sequel's coming out, so if you haven't ever checked it out and you have some free time, I would say it's definitely worth a play. The sequel looks really good, having seen previews for that. But which doesn't come out until
2013.
Is that true?
Yeah, or at least at the end of this year.
Oh, God, we might all be dead by then. We might actually be in the same situation they're in by then.
Then we will be fighting ghosts. Next game.
Yeah, and monsters. That's all I can think of right now, actually. So that's it.
Okay. I thought you said you had two more games.
I did, but I probably brushed the other one out of my head because it's such crap.
I told you.
I know.
Why you're so high on Puddle. You were like me with Binary Domain.
Because it looked so good, man, but it's not worth it.
And let's not judge Binary Domain until you get your hands on the full code, because...
Okay.
Anyway, Blue, what you been playing?
Fair
honestly,
enough.
I really haven't been playing a whole heck of a lot besides, Star Wars Episode 1 Racer, which I'm going to be finishing up the column after we record this. And... more Persona 3 Portable. I'm up to like 42 or 43 hours in that. I'm past where I was in Persona 3 Fest on the PS2. So now I'm thinking, maybe I should go check out the PS2 version and see where I left off, see if I can still pick it up where, depending on what I did with the levelings. Because, I'm playing P3P on easy. And it kept the pace going really well. When it comes to RPGs, I don't really want much of a challenge. I want something that's more amusing than challenging because, like I said, I've been playing Final Fantasy X for, 9 years, something like that.
If you want a good RPG, this is where I'm going to get back on my little horse. if you want a good RPG and you're going to hook your PS2 up anyway, you should check out Wild Arms 5. Because for my money, that is one of the best JRPGs of that generation.
I'll have to check that out. Cause I
Sean, you should get a full-sized horse, because that little horse isn't doing
it. Well, the reason is my little horse is because the whole reason I've been thinking about Wild Arms is if you go into the settings on the Vita, you can change the background of your little nameplate that people see when they look at their friends list.
Okay.
And half of the little nameplate designs are from PS2 games, so there's Wild Arms 5 and Rogue Galaxy... they're kind of all, I'm drawing a blank now, but they're all a bunch of PS2 games, so it made me think that they're going to do what they did with the PSP Go and just unleash a flood of games on the PlayStation Network when PS2 emulation comes out. Because, it would make sense to have all these Vita, look at this PS2 game. You can't play that on this Vita. But so I'm thinking that eventually, somewhere down the line, you'll be able to play all those. And when we do, I might... write an obnoxious article about how great Wild Arms 5 was and everybody needs to play it.
Okay. Great book. I agree.
So, Deagle, do we have an interview?
Yes, we do.
Is it with NIS?
It is.
Did they give you money over Skype?
A lot of it.
Oh, boy.
I want some money.
Yes, money's good. We're going to have Ryan Ryuta and Nick from NIS America talking about Hyperdimension Neptunia, MK2, not Mortal Kombat 2, and Disgaea 3, Absence of Detention, right now.
I want to take you for a ride.
Hello, Desert Eagle here with my friends Nick and Ryan from NIS America on hand to talk about two titles, the recently released Hyperdimension Neptunia MK2, as well as the imminent publishing of Disgaea 3 Absence of Detention for the Vita. So welcome back to the show, dudes.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Prism Rangers ready?
You know it. Locked and loaded.
Locked and loaded. Glad to hear. So let's start off for the unfortunate listeners who missed last year's Hyperdimension Neptunia. The game was a allegorical take on, what was it, the sixth, seventh generation? Seventh console generation? Yeah, seven.
Yeah, that's seven.
I always get confused. The ones with the generation with the 360, PS3, and Wii. So first let me ask, do you have to experience that journey, the first game, to fully appreciate MK2?
You do not. It takes place in sort of like an alternate universe, sort of a I guess they're setting up a multiverse, kind of like comics. And because there's still some terms that may not get explained as thoroughly without the knowledge of the first game, there is like an in-game encyclopedia called the Netpedia. And that can fill you in on the mythos of game industry and all the characters that you'll find in there.
Okay, cool. Now, let's talk about the plot line to the sequel. Can you give me a little insight what's going on there?
Yeah, basically, you start out in the game industry graveyard, which is where all the old consoles go to die. And I guess they say their souls wander game industry forever at that place. And the main characters from the first game, along with Netgear, Neptune's little sister, are fighting against somebody called CFW Magic, who is the leader of the R4 Syndicate of International Crime. And their goal is to stop piracy, I guess.
It's a noble goal.
A noble goal, like indeed. But kind of like real life, they fail. only kind of, you know. And so they get captured, and Netgear is rescued by IF and Compa. And the rest of the game sort of revolves around them trying to gather support around game industry to go back to the graveyard and save the main characters from the first game. And to stop the revival.
So we do get to see Neptune, Noir, and Blanc this time around?
Absolutely. And Vert.
I'm
partial to Vert.
I'm sorry I left her out.
She's pretty awesome in this game.
100 hand slap to do the host.
Exactly.
Now, two elements that can elevate a JRPG are the dialogue and a good battle mechanic. I've noticed that MK2 received an M rating this time out. What type of conversations are in store for us?
There's a couple heated conversations, I guess you could say. There's the obligatory Hot Springs event. There's a sequence where Vert is getting a massage by not her sister, since there's no handheld equivalent for the lean box people, but she's sort of like adopted or wants to be a sister. So that scene is pretty exciting, especially if you have the Japanese audio on. We didn't voice that scene in English.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's got some interesting exchanges.
Go right to it and turn on the Japanese language option on there. So cool. Let's talk about the combat. Does it deliver the type of encounters that, Compile Heart and Idea Factory enthusiasts are used to? A lot of the different gauges there.
Right. And I think this is kind of a departure from most of their other battle systems. This one is more active, I guess you could say. It's a lot faster.
Okay. If you could compare it to maybe another game that has a similar combat mechanic, is there one out there that lends itself to an easy comparison?
I've seen some people compare it to Quest 64, but I wouldn't really make that comparison just because of the stigma around that game. I would say it's closer to Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter or Soccer Wars So Long, My Love.
Okay.
It's got the open field, but still turn-based, so it's pretty cool. It lends sort of like a not real-time strategy, but sort of a strategic element to traditional turn-based combat.
Now, one of the things about the first game that was really interesting were some of the NPCs, which I understand are become playable characters. Personalities like Falcom, who travels the world and writes about her exploits under the pseudonym Adol Christian or A Christian?
A Christian.
A Christian. Sorry, not Adol. What other personalities make an appearance?
You'll also see Cave, who is part of like the cave developers, mm-hmm. which doesn't really have much of a presence here yet, I guess. They mostly deal in the hell shoot 'em up style games. Bullet hell. Mm-hmm. Bullet hell, indeed. So a lot of her dialogue references like navigating through tight spaces and like avoiding attacks.
Mm-hmm. I'm laughing because I heard a Resident Evil door shut sound effect.
We also have the crows here too. Yeah. Just fly in.
Oh yeah.
You guys are hardcore fans of the series too.
Yeah, you don't want to know all the different keys we need to open up the office doors.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've messed up Moonlight Sonata and I had to stay outside the office for about 3 hours till I got in.
I know, I remember I had to push a box to access a vent.
Okay, so moving on from obscure puzzles that made us pull our hair out, let's talk about DLC plans that were kind of trickled out with the first game. What kind of supplemental material will be offered to fans for MK2?
We'll follow sort of the same release schedule of like 4 or 5 items a week for a couple of months, and items themselves will range from like free dungeons to free events to just some costume items, and you know, you'll be able to get Cave and Falcom to join your party because they only make minor appearances mm-hmm. in the game itself. So that opens up a bunch of events starring them, and eventually they join.
Cool. Now, so far, I've noticed that critical reception has been a little bit chilly. There's a current Metacritic score, 61, but that is an improvement. I think the original game garnered like a 45. And the thing is, fans seem to love the series. The collector's edition of MK2 just sold out really quickly. So I want to ask you, what do you think is the source of this disparity?
In the two scores between the two games?
Between critic score and consumer's appreciation for the games.
I think it's...
Are we as critics just out of touch?
I don't think that's quite it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tread lightly.
Just because the nature of the game, it's mm-hmm. a little bit more niche, and it takes maybe even a stride a little bit farther outside the more standard like Atelier or any other RPG game. And it definitely has a few it's kind of it's like an acquired taste. And I mm-hmm. guess if I can only imagine if you're reviewing a game, you have to kind of one think about the fan base, and then mm-hmm. so I think a little bit of that's tied into it. But I mean, we're definitely happy to see, that the reviews did overall go up, and that a lot of people, have come to see that, that a lot of improvements were made, and, and some of the feedback that Idea Factory did get, and, because they've been checking out the US reviews too. So cool. I think that's kind of, a big thing is to see that a lot of people are noticing the improvements. So, I mean, mm-hmm. we're just, we're definitely happy with how things are going.
Yeah, cool.
It's sort of got that like cult hit status, like cult movies that mm-hmm. may not be critically received well, but for the fans of that movie or whatever, it's really like, hey, this is pretty sweet.
Yeah, certainly. Now let's talk absence of absence of attention. Sorry for the Vita, which is due out April 17th. So. Say Uncle Sam has taken everything from me 2 days previously, and I do scrape enough money to purchase it. What kind of Vita-exclusive content can I look forward to?
Well, basically, there's going to be a few new cameos mm-hmm. aside from everything else. I mean, again, it's everything that was originally in the first one, the Bare Bones game. And then what we did is we took all the DLC that was available, some $60 worth of DLC that you'd have to kind of either individually or in a pack download, put that in there. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of new content like cameos, like I said, and a few other things like PS Vita functionality. Mm-hmm. There is a new kind of GPS function where if you are playing the game while you are traveling, mm-hmm. it actually knows that you're kind of moving around using the PS Vita functionality, so that it kind of translates into stat boosts. So, mm-hmm. granted, you can't like fly to China with the thing on sleep mode and expect to be powered up, you know, kind of hooked up at the end. Mm-hmm. But, you know, while you are traveling and physically playing the game, you know, it does translate to some stat boosts. So that's kind of one thing I thought was really cool. And then, you know, there's other, you know, PS Vita functionality incorporated in with it. So we're definitely excited. I mean, you know, this guy 3 was really, you know, received really well. And then, mm-hmm. you know, putting all these things in there and then putting it, you know, for $40, I think is a steal. And, you know, you get the infinite replayability. So,
yeah,
we're definitely excited.
Very cool. So look forward to April 17th. So thanks, guys, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Oh man, those printies, they're always different in every single game.
You're a hater, dude!
So,
wait, is that Blue? Do we have Blue back?
No, that was Rob. So we lost Blue somehow.
Oh, boy. Good job, Robert.
So he's not going to be here for trivia.
Okay, so we'll carry on without him. Do our best. Okay, so we have some trivia honoring the PSP before we move on to the Vita. So let's start with the PSP stuff. While not all retailers may have received the Vita memo, consumers in the U.S. were well acquainted with the PSP thanks to what curious advertising technique? Is it A, bathroom stalls with ads for the system, B, graffiti spray painted around major cities, C, product placement in a Girls Gone Wild video where Joe Francis was seen playing the system, or D, a giant Easter egg hunt around New York City with systems carefully hid in urban environments?
Oh, Lord. That's tough. I want to say it's the graffiti one.
The last one.
The last one. Did you even listen?
It was so much information.
Correct answer, the girls aren't wild. It's graffiti. Good job.
The Girls Gone Wild one threw me because I feel like I remember one of those commercials where Snoop Dogg was holding one.
Maybe that's what entered my unconscious. Number two, if sharing is caring, a scant few titles really cared about two players playing a game from a single UMD. All the following titles allowed players to game share except one. Name it. Which one didn't allow people to game share? Was it A, Medieval Resurrection, B, Killzone Liberation, C, Loco Roco 2, or D, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End?
Wait, what was the question?
Which one of those doesn't allow you to game share?
Thanks, Sean.
Pirates?
I want to say Killzone, because I don't see how you'd play that multiplayer.
I want to say Pirates just because it would be ironic. I know it's not the right answer, but I think it'd be funny.
Correct answer. Loco Roco 2. Three, with the Vita moving a 1.2 million units across the globe, it's time to think in the millions. Name the one PSP title from the following list which didn't push seven-digit sales figures. Okay, so we're looking, Sage, for the one that didn't sell a million copies. Was it A, Midnight Club 3 Dub Edition, B, Wipeout Pure, C, Killzone Liberation, one more time for you, Sean, or D, Need for Speed Most Wanted, 510.
Midnight Club.
Need for Speed.
Correct answer, Killzone Liberation.
Damn it.
There's so many deals for Killzone that I'm surprised it didn't eventually sell a million.
Okay, so time to move on to Vita trivia here. Number four, Super Monkey Ball Banana Splits for the Vita may just be the dessert you're looking for with a unique caramel covered quirk. Name it. A, using the camera to put a picture of your face on the ball. C, creating your own level by snapping a picture. C, using rear touch to offer an end of level segment where you get to spank the monkey. Or D, at least one collectible monkey ball will be made available through a near connection with another player starting from the Sega team.
You're going to use rear touch to spank your monkey.
I want to say it's the last one just because I think that's really cool.
I want to say it's your face on a ball.
Correct.
creating your own level by snapping a picture. Sorry. They should let me add the fun to the banana splits. Okay, number five, clear head now. Our friends in the UK might know ChartTrack, which tracks the top 40 titles across English retailers. Just how many of the Vita's 23 launch titles landed in the top spots? Is it A, 5, B, 7, C, 10, or D, 13?
Wait, so what seven, did you...
23 titles launched in the UK.
Uh-huh.
How many landed in the top 40? 5, 7, 10, or 13, Sage? Quick, quick, quick.
10.
Okay, Sean.
13.
Blue.
9.
Correct answer, 10.
I win!
Yeah, apparently it sold really well in the UK. I'm wondering if this is going to be the new Sega Genesis.
Blue, where did you come from?
Space.
Oh.
Tennessee.
Oh, I actually thought it was Blue.
Tennessee.
Never mind. Arrested
Development for you guys.
Got it.
Should we move on to our questions, our mailbag, Sean?
Yes.
You want to read that?
Yes. Okay. So DKM Lover asks, I guess he doesn't really ask. He says, "I'd like to hear your thoughts on the Jennifer Hepler backlash." For those of you who don't know, it was basically Jennifer Hepler works for BioWare, and back in 2007. She did an interview saying that it would be basically she's saying it'd be interesting to see a game that focuses almost entirely on story and allows you to skip gameplay parts if you don't want to do them. The idea being that they could bring in more female gamers by basically making the gameplay parts optional.
Well, specifically moms. She wasn't saying that all female gamers are not interested in combat. She was saying that moms who are busy but want to still be able to do gameplay stuff but have to, like, feed their kids and clean the house might like the storyline but don't have time for the combat.
Yeah, well, and it's not even really gender-specific if you get right down to it. It's people who don't do this as their hobby but still want to have a good story might want to have another option where they're not stuck in a firefight.
Right.
Or what have you. It doesn't necessarily have to be even a violent thing. It could just be whatever if you don't want to get stuck and you want to see the rest of the story. If you are Blue and have been playing Final Fantasy X for 11
years.
However long he's been playing that, you might want to have another option. And there's a huge backlash, and it turned into... I mean, this is a huge backlash. This happened 6 years later. And it turned into a bunch of personal attacks.
Right. Because people are now saying that it's her fault that there are games that are less combat invested, which is, in my opinion, really fucking stupid.
And you know what? A lot of these people are the same people who probably said it was a neat feature in LA Noire, so they just need to get over themselves. But my thing, too, is that BioWare's answer was they put out a statement saying, hey, what you guys did sucked, and we're going to donate $1,000 in her name to an anti-bullying
Oh, that's really nice.
It is. I don't think it really went far enough. The thing is, a lot of those comments are trackable, and I feel like BioWare should have just been like, fuck you, don't get our products. We'll figure out ways to not let you wear our products anymore.
Not only that, but they were really out of line disparaging. Like, it wasn't like she said this and a week later the gaming industry tanked. She said this, and 6 years later, due to a lot of different things, not her comment, the gaming industry, some parts of it have gone that way, and people were saying things about her that were very, like, mentioning her genitalia and, like, calling her really filthy names and, like, shit that's not even relevant. And this is 6 years later, and, oh, my God, how rude are you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying that's a bad thing, but she also went on the offensive, and that probably wasn't the best tactic at all.
I mean, what a...
Silence.
I don't necessarily think that's necessarily bad. My problem is
you're going to feed the trolls if you go back to them and you start, you know,
that's
calling
true,
you.
But
you're
that
no better than
that. You're absolutely true.
But she should be able to defend herself, and it shouldn't have... I mean, I agree with Sean that, like, BioWare should have done more to be like, whoa, guys, you're totally out of line, and you're, like, offending us as a company, not just this woman, and therefore you should shut the fuck up or don't buy her shit anymore because you're offending the whole company.
Like, right. And I think that's been the moral of this story, is that the gaming community feels like there was a really good article about from I don't remember who put it out. And Guy Kroll was the one who shared it, but it was basically how gamers feel entitled to these things they have really no actual stake in.
You're not entitled to anything, is it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like somebody makes a movie, you're a fan of that movie, you're not entitled to the creative process of that movie, and if you are, it'll be a worse movie. I mean,
right.
the creative process doesn't really do well to have all these extra voices in it. But the gaming community, for some reason, feels entitled to that sort of thing, and it's just not the case.
Well, what I think is really interesting is that, like, okay, so this thing came up, and then I was telling someone about Risen 2, a friend of mine, and we had a really good conversation about how part of why the market has gone into this, like, you know, Fable baby hand-holding kind of area, which also includes things that are less combat-oriented, like games that are a little softer, really, is because once upon a time, companies made kids for video games for kids, and then they started making video games for adults, and then some of those companies stopped making any video games for kids. So a lot of these games got a lot more simple and a lot more user-friendly and a lot more, which is why I think Nintendo still does really well, because they make a lot of games for kids and for, like, moms who are, you know, moms who are sitting at home and they're like, hey, I'd love to jump on the Wii and play something really simple for 10 minutes before I have to go pick up Jimmy from soccer. So a lot of it comes from none of it comes from this woman's comments, but a lot of it comes from the fact that, like, game developers, a lot of them stopped. They, like, rather than splitting their market between easy games for kids and more, you know, adult games, they just made adult games stupid so that kids could play them too.
Sorry, you made me think of Ego Raptor did a video comparing Mega Man to Mega Man X, and he kind of goes off on a tangent about how game designers hold hands and the way they do it, and it's really good. You should listen to it. Go watch it on YouTube. It's really funny.
Okay, I will. Send me the link and I'll watch it.
I will. Next question, though, because we're kind of running over on time. Eddie Cruz asks, did you guys see the one-up article? We don't need to answer. Yeah, we will, because I already said his name. Did you guys see the one-up article talking about how some developers have stopped making Vita games already? And he links to an article on 1UP that says that there was some unnamed source saying that their unnamed company was not going to make any more Vita games. And it basically is kind of a non-article. Basically, we're waiting to hear the sales number. Early sales numbers say that it's having the exact same first week that the 3DS did. So anybody who would have said they would have pulled out before first week international sales is foolish, I think.
I think
it was just rabble rousing, to be perfect.
Right.
Rabble.
I think they were trying to get some page hits because, yeah, like you said, it was unnamed. They didn't have any facts. It was all speculation by some single source.
Yeah.
So not even journalism.
Yeah.
Sorry, 1UP. You know, I like you guys, but you can do better. Yeah.
Didn't that journalism is our over there kind of go down the drain after all the numerous Ziff Davis layoffs?
That is actual Blue. Hi, Blue.
Yeah,
I live.
That was years ago. No, they actually, after UGO bought them and they laid a bunch of people off, they actually had a little minor renaissance for a while, but it's just they are what they are. There's no such thing as a large gaming journalism site anymore. They're large gaming community sites. And then there are the people that are paid to be part of those communities, and they don't really, I don't know, it's a weird divide, and people keep trying to do it. And this is where people argued with me about IGN. So IGN's not a news site, it's a community site, and they can do things like Star and Mass Effect, and 1UP is part of that. They can post a completely erroneous story, because at the end of the day, they're just guys who get paid to be on a really big forum.
Slap the word rumor on it, and it's good.
Yeah, I mean, and, like, in a way, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not really, it's not like you're saying, you know, the Taliban is doing something important. This is news. It's video games. Whatever.
Yep.
Anyway, that is our show. If you'd like to read our not erroneous reviews on our not community site, you can go there at www.tech-gaming.com. If you'd like to hear our rather erroneous Twitters on the Twitter community site, you can follow us. Rob is, or Desert Eagle, as some people call him, is at tech_gaming. I am Sean Nola with two N's. Blue is Blue Swim, and Sage is Samurage.
Hello.
Please subscribe to us on iTunes.
She says hello at the end.
You say goodbye, I say hello.
Just like that song from the Beatles.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you mention our Facebook
page? Long and
page?
Winding road.
No, I was trying to mention a bunch of stuff, and then people kept interrupting.
Sorry. We have a Facebook page. Go to it.
Yeah, because nobody is our friend on Facebook, and it kind of makes me sad.
Oh, well, I'm our friend.
Facebook. Twitter's better.
Subscribe to us on iTunes. There are two Tech Gamings on iTunes. They're both us, but one of them actually updates, and the other one stopped updating a long time ago. So make sure you get both of them if you want to listen to old episodes, but just the one that updates if you just want to keep listening to new stuff. And also get a Gravatar, because seriously, I'm tired of being the only person with a picture, even though my lovely dinosaur face is up there every single day for you to see.
Mm-hmm. There's a few people.
There are a few people, and I love each and every one of you. And I don't
unlove. I need to get my Gravatar.
Yeah. People claiming that it's me. Yeah, people claiming that it's me keeping you from having a picture.
What?
Somebody in the comments was like, "What? You've been working here long enough. Why don't you have a picture?" Because he didn't set himself up a picture. Anyway, that is our show.
That's the community for you.
That is your show. We're all dirty people, and we love you.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.